bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, yes. Your ears are not deceiving you. This is the Photo Show. I'm Ewan Rankin, and I've actually bothered to do one. We've got an assembled throng of people in the chat room who turned up with disbelief to see that I was actually doing this. But I am. Video and audio, it'll go out this weekend. There's no question of it. All the photo news and your questions as well. So let's get started. First thing, reviews. Thank you very much. First one comes from PhotoKK. He's put 5 stars. A truly great podcast, informal, informative and skilled with non-US centric stuff. Ewan brings just the right amount of informed criticism, honesty to the reviews. Just great. From Keith K. Thanks, Keith. Enjoyed that very much. I've got another one that's similar, but they don't agree with the reviews quite so much. Syrup71 has said, this is a superbly entertaining and informative podcast. Love the frank views that are offered. And though I don't often agree, they're offered in the clear and manner. Best of all, it's fun. Thanks very much, mate. Do appreciate that. Both 5 stars, very kind. Doesn't matter if you put a 1 star, we'll still read them out. We always have. Please send us your reviews. Go to iTunes and write them down. Or if you write a review of the podcast on a blog or something, send us the link and we'll read that out as well. And refer other people onto it. Do appreciate it. Thank you very much for taking the time, everyone that does give us a review. So, news stories then. Here we go. First thing then, are you into high-speed photography? Well, the chances are, unless you're loaded, no, you're not. Now, what's changed is that a professor... an ex-student of MIT has come up with a new high-speed camera called the Edgetronic. Now, it's named after Professor Eugene Edgerton, who was a huge photographer at MIT. And actually, this guy that's invented it, Mike Matter, only went to MIT because Edgerton badgered him into it. This thing is a full-colour high-speed camera. It runs at, you're not going to be impressed by this, 1280 by 1024 pixels. So it's not huge. But here's the best bit. It shoots 494 frames a second at that resolution. So that's not too bad. It's a 4:3 image, obviously, there. So it's not, it's a 4:3 sized camera, I guess. But it's not that impressive in that respect. If you drop the resolution down, even just a fraction, then to the next step down, you're looking at shooting 17,000 frames per second, which is absolutely phenomenal. This thing's got all the electronics in that's been designed and built by Matter himself. He's got a Kickstarter project-y type thing running at the moment, and he's a few grand short. But if you back him, you are guaranteed to get one of these cameras. It sends the images to an SD card that sits in the back of it. It's not particularly huge. I mean, there's a picture up here, and you can see the Ethernet port for it. So you can see it's not an enormous thing. It's got 2 USB outs on it, and you can put microphone in as well if you really want to. What's really quite special about this camera is the price. If you pledge $5,000, you're guaranteed to get one of these cameras, because that's how much one of these things is going to cost. And you go, bloody hell, $5,000. But if you're talking about high-speed photography up to 17,000 frames a second, $5,000's nothing. Absolutely nothing. You buy one of the, is it the Phantom cameras? Those things kind of start at 30k and go up. So this really is a very, very good purchase if you're into that stuff. You've got to have $5,000 lying around doing nothing, and you've got to make sure you're going to use this and get some commercial value from it. But why not back Mike up? Because he's done a great job getting it to market. Good lad. Well done. Now then, supermodels and their paparazzi and all that kind of stuff. There's a whole shebang going on in Costa Rica where... some ex-bodyguards, they're ex now, but they weren't at the time, of Gisele Bündchen have been charged with attempted murder of paparazzi. The incident took place in April in 2009, and it was at this an estate that Bündchen was getting married at. And two agency France Presse photographers, Cortez and Aviel, were shooting stuff of the wedding at a distance, and they were pounced upon by 3 bodyguards. They approached them. They jumped into a car and took off at high speed, and the bodyguards pulled out pistols and started shooting at the car as it went away, just like it was James Bond. But they have now been caught, and they've been charged with attempted murder. The case has finally got itself to court, and we'll know in a few weeks whether they're going to be found guilty or not. And the irony of it is, the judge has said that there can't be any photography in the courtroom, and there normally is. So, bad luck. And there's a nice picture of Zazelle, look. She's come back well since me and her stopped dating, I've got to say. I think she looks great. Well done, Giselle. Chin up, mate. ISOCELL is a brand new sensor that's been released from Samsung. They reckon that this is going to completely revolutionise mobile photography, as in mobile, as in your cell phone. The thing with this is it's supposed to increase dynamic range by about 30%. So your dynamic range is really, you know, the detail level that you can see within the colours, the saturations and the blacks and the whites and the tones. And they've released a picture which, to the average eye, you'd probably think, well, OK, I get that the one on the left's a bit burnt out and the one on the right's quite quite detailed. But that's an enormous amount of detail. When you actually look at the picture at the bottom, it's a shot from a field of tulips. And they've zoomed right in on one that's in the foreground. And the level of detail in terms of the colour range that there is in the petals in that one is absolutely superb. It's brilliant. And now if that comes off, that's going to mean that your images are going to look a lot less desaturated, a lot more saturated than they currently do from your cell phone. And also you're going to get a lot more colour detail, so you're going to get less burnout areas. If you get less burnout areas, then you're going to be able to do more with it when you stick it into Photoshop. The one thing that you get from the image on the left here of the tulip is the fact that where there's white areas, there's no colour information, there's no pixel information at all. So that thing is just showing burned out, 255, 255, 255 on the red, green, blue scale. There is nothing you can do. You will never recover that. And the blowout on stuff is what really makes things look bad. You can never recover from that. White whites don't look as natural as black blacks. You can always get away with underexposure rather than over. You're also going to get a lot more detail in your blacks as well. So in the darker areas, you can see there on the left-hand side that it's very blocky, if you like. There's not a lot of tone change in the shadow that's on the left, whereas if you look on the right, there's an enormous amount of tone change from the top to the bottom where it comes through from the sunlight. I think it's a fantastic result. That image, even though it's a low-res image, that clearly shows that this technology is really, really good. You can never recover from a blowout. Those are words to live by, Ewan. Well done, Batwench. Yes, you're absolutely right. What this is doing is, effectively, when you look at the pixels, because they're getting so closely packed in, Samsung say that there is crosstalk between the pixels. So there's reflection of lights that bounce around, and also then, I'm guessing, electronic crosstalk of some description. What the ISOCELL does is put a clear barrier between pixels, which reduces the amount of crosstalk in the light, and it allows more focused correction and gathering of light by the pixel. 30% reduction, it says. And there's no question, the image on the right is a lot more than 30% better than the one on the left. So if this makes it to market and they don't gouge the market, then good on them. Well done, Samsung. We love you. You've got one of your cameras later for a look at. That was very good. A new app has been touted out by Adrian Graham and Carl Jogreen. Now, these guys used to work for Google and Facebook, respectively, so they're pretty well up on the photography sharing market. And what they've done is come up with a simple app for Android and for iOS, which allows you to create a slideshow with some images in it, and for you to then commentate over where the images were shot, what you were trying to portray, the difficulties, the settings of the camera, trouble that you had, anecdotal stories that are fun and pleasant, or anything like that. Now, all you've got to do, according to this, is open up a new project. So there you go. It's called Shadow Puppet. You create a new Shadow Puppet. And then take photos that are going to sit in the Shadow Puppet and number them and reorder them and that kind of stuff. And then you record a voice track over it. So as the thing's playing, you manually advance the slide forwards and you hit record on the button on your iPhone. You just describe whatever you want, really, what's going on, what your settings were, what the troubles were, what the positives were, what the negatives were, any trouble that you got from the police because you were shooting MI6 or something like that. All of that stuff will be in there, and it's up to you. I've got to say, I'm not a great lover of photographers getting all dewy-eyed about how they shot stuff. My personal view is if you look at an image, you should be able to look at it and take something from it that you want. Photography is a personal thing. I looked at some competition entries, and one of the listeners to the show, actually, Julian, wrote in and said, I entered this competition, this is the shot that won, and I think it's awful. Why is it won? And it was just a picture of a guy, a little kid with a whole pile of old people sat on sun lounges around the back with a towel tied around his neck. And I looked at it and I said, that means so much to me. Why? Because I've got exactly the same image at home of me pretending to be a superhero playing in the garden with all the old folk laying down on sun lounges. That really touches me. So that's the point. Photography's personal. If you want to get into describing what was going on and who did what and what the settings, sorry. It's not for me, I'm afraid. But well done, fellas. I hope you get your money. The next story is quite interesting. This is an image of a lady named Avril Nolan. Now, Avril Nolan is a model, and she turned up at a fashion shoot and with Jenna Kumbo. And the fashion shoot proceeded, and she took loads of pictures of her. Now, Kumbo says that she got a model release off Nolan. And, of course, your model releases are super, super important. You've got to get them. Even if they're not, you know, legally you could argue your way out of them potentially, but they're just note for peace of mind. I would always get one. So Kumbo got a model release, and then after the shoot, they all went their separate ways. She then sold the image on to Getty to try and get some money for it. There was no restrictions placed on it, and she did confirm she had a model release. Getty then sold it on in good faith to the New York State Division of Human Rights, and that's where it gets really interesting, because this girl became the poster girl for human rights for HIV positive people. So she was plastered up everywhere all over New York. She only lives in Brooklyn, unfortunately, so that was a bit of a downer. And of course, everyone suddenly says the girl might have AIDS. So she's getting very sticky questions from people inside her family, her friends, her employer is suddenly asking questions as well. And of course, not to mention any love interests she's got, they're all asking questions too. She says she gave no permission for this to be used as a poster for HIV and that kind of stuff. But then she signed a model release, I'm guessing, saying that Kumbo could do whatever she wanted with the image. What the interesting part is, she's now suing for $450,000, nearly $500,000, saying that she suffered a great deal of pain and damage from it. And I can understand why. I mean, if someone puts a picture of you up saying you've got HIV, then it's going to be pretty detrimental to your life. So she wants her money. She's suing. There's no decision yet. It's got to go to court. But there's a model release, allegedly, which hasn't come out yet in the press, so we don't know what it actually said. If the shoot was paid for, then to a certain degree, she might be on a bit of a sticky wicket. Certainly one of the things that I put on my model release is I get the models to write down how much they were paid for the shoots. And that way you can clearly see it's a commercial thing. And if you're going to enter into a commercial agreement with someone and someone's going to give you a good sum of money for the activity that you do, it's not a freebie, then you have to sign over a lot of your rights. And it is a binding contract at that point as well. If you can't prove that you paid the money for the activity, you're going to have a hard time showing there was consideration that passed between you. So then the model release really doesn't act as a contract. Just saying, yeah, I waive all my rights. Well, okay, you can only waive all your rights if you've been given compensation for that, some consideration for that. And without the fee of money that was paid, even if it's just travel expenses, then she's going to have a hard time. If Kumbo has got the model release, then she's on a lot firmer ground. If she can't produce that model release, it's going to be a hell of an interesting week in court. No question of that. Next thing, the gear. Absolutely. Paul Ass says, Batwinch, but there could be worse things to be a poster girl for when you think about it. Good point. Good point. I can't remember. What answers on a postcard. What would be the worst thing to be a poster girl or poster boy for? We could have that as a competition. That'd be good. First thing up in the gear line then is the Streamline sling bags from Lowepro. Now, these look like handbags to me, but they're supposedly wide enough to take micro DSLR, so something like the a poster boy for erectile dysfunction, says Adam. Okay, yeah, that wins. No question. Definite winner. How did old Pele do it as well? Yeah. Mm. These are supposed to be able to take small DSLRs, like I said, so this, the D100... the 100D, God, from Canon, will fit in these things. Also, it'll take a lot of the cameras that have got the small extra lenses, so Nikon 1 and G3 and those kind of things for Lumix will all go in there. And they're supposed to be pretty protective. They're well padded. They've got a zip opener so you can expand them ever so slightly on the bottom. They come in two flavours, the Slimline 150, which is the one on the right, is £33, which I was quite impressed at, because Low Pro are not renowned for their cheap bags. And that's not a bad price at all. The Slimline 250, which is the one on the left, which is an awful lot bigger, is £37. So it's only £4 difference. You get a lot more space. I like these. They look pretty good. One thing that's quite interesting as well is inside it contains a pouch for a tablet. So you can get, on the right-hand one, you can get a 7-inch tablet, and on the 250, you can get your full iPad in there if you really want to, 10-inch tablets. What would be interesting is if there's enough room there to squeeze a MacBook Air, because if you could get a MacBook Air in these and a DSLR with a couple of small lenses, that'd be a really good day-out bag. Really good day-out, and there's little zip pouches there for lens wipes and stuff like that, or something for the kids, you know, a little few sweets or something like that. I think, instead of looking at kind of amateur shooters or pro shooters who are going to use this, this would be a great one for day out. This is a day out bag without a doubt. I'm going to order the one on the left and have a try of it, because I think it looks quite decent. I took the piss out of them though. They do look like handbags. And also, it's how long the strap is, whether it can go over you or not. We'll have to see. Is it a man bag? Says Batwinch. Well, it is if I buy one, I suppose. Adam says he'd buy one. Low Pro of about £130 out of me on three bags. They're incredibly good quality, though. Yeah, they are. I've got one of their sling bags, and it's brilliant. And I've also got up in the loft one of their rucksacks, and that's fantastic as well. Batwinch says she'd use one for work. There you go. See, there's no limitation on the fact you've got to use it for cameras. It looks pretty utilitarian. I've got to say, I like it. I like it a lot. PG's in the chat room. Hello, mate. How you doing? Well done. Next bit of gear we've got is the Lumix DMC LZ30. Now, without looking on the net chat room, see if you can tell me how much you think this camera is going to cost you. But don't cheat, please. There's no prizes or anything. This is a 16-megapixel camera. It's a fixed lens zoom, so it's not an interchangeable lens camera. It's compact in inverted commas CSC, yep. 35 times optical zoom. So this is going to go effectively from 25 millimeters out to 875 millimeters. So handheld at 800 millimeters is a hell of a feat, most definitely. Are you going to get pretty soft in the last sort of 75 mil of this at 875? I would say probably you are. You wouldn't be shooting this without sticking it on some kind of monopod, or at least resting it on a brick wall, or bracing yourself. The thing that's nice about it is it's got manual shooting mode, so it'll appeal to people who are maybe learning photography. Certainly you'd think about giving it to a young person maybe, because who wanted to start dabbling with manual settings. So that's excellent that it's got it. 3-inch LCD touchscreen on the back. It shoots HD video right the way up to 1080p, and it's got 10 crap filters that you can use, just like Instagram. It's available in red or black, and the red one looks quite nice. I quite like that. I always used to love Mark Knopfler's guitar. That was like a cherry red with a metallic finish, and it looks just like that, so that's where it appeals. 160 quid, says Adam. 125 quid, says Batwench. Now, here's the thing. There's no batteries and there's no charger, because it runs off AA batteries, which tow into the handle grip, and there's four of them, along with the SD card that you can use to record with it. Functions are pretty, you know, the controls are pretty simple. I mean, there's a zoom on the top and an on and off switch for recording, and that's it, really. And the dial that rolls around and gives you your shooting mode. OAA greater than 3, that's a legendary compact. I think it's good that it runs on batteries. If you've got rechargeable systems, then go for it. I think they're really good. Total price for this thing, Adam must have cheated, because it's £158.99 is the retail price on this thing. I looked around on the net, and I managed to get it at a camera shop that was some obscure place I've never heard of before for £139, and it was brand new. I've looked at the images that come off this on some of the review pages. They're pretty passable up to about ISO 800. After ISO 800, they're kind of pointless, really. The macro images are very good. I liked them. I thought they were really well done. They were far better than the general images. And the flash looks pretty well balanced as well. There was quite a few shots of shooting of people in a dense, darkened room, which is the worst one for blowing out, and also at distance in kind of like an alleyway or something like that for highlight. And I've got to say, I thought the power of the flash was decent. It didn't look like it was too over the top. Which normally these things do. At the price, 158 quid. Got to buy your own batteries, though. I think it's all right. it looks a decent camera. That certainly, if you've got a kid like Ellis, you know, he's learning photography now, he wants a better camera. If I gave him that, because it looks a lot like my DSLRs, he'd be very happy with it, even if you can't go to interchangeable lenses. And with the manual mode, it's got that expandability to try and, you know, push yourself and learn a bit more about how to use manual. So, yeah, good winner, I think. Good winner. Stock up on AAs from Poundland, and you could be shooting all day. And it doesn't actually tell you how long 4AAs last, you know, how many exposures, whether that's like 200 exposures with flash, 300 without flash or something like that, which is I thought, an important piece of information that I could have done with. Killer price, you can knock it out. Good guess. He said, I just threw a number out there. It was either 160 or 200 for me. I've got an old Olympus that uses some of them. They're really nice. Depends on the battery make, says Batwench, of course. Yes, you get yourself your Duracells. But if you're going to go, I mean, I went to Costco the other week and I got some Sony EcoChargery things, and they're brilliant. They're really good. And they hold the battery life for up to 3 months without dissipating, which is good as well. So I've bought a whole pile of those, and they come with a nice little wallet that you can put them in as well, because I've got the worst thing I've got is bloody AA batteries floating around all over in my bags because they come out of the packets. If you use the NiMa batteries, you'd get 2,000 milliamp hours. AAs, you'd get, in theory, 400 to 600 shots out of four of them, reckons Adams. Enerloops, those are the ones we're in, Roddy. Yeah, they're really good. I need to get a charger for them, though, but they hold for like 3 to 4 months on charge, or 3 years or something. It's really stupid, the amount that it has. Well done. Right, so that was the Lumix. Now, the next one is an interesting one. This is the Samsung DV150F. I don't know what the F stands for. Maybe we'll find out at the end of this. It's a simple little camera. It's a handbag camera, I would suggest, maybe, or a night out camera by the looks. It's got a front-facing LCD screen as well, so you can shoot your own selfies. And these two have been shooting their own selfies for a while. It's available, wait for the colours, they're in purple, black, white, green, and yes, pink. And the pink one, my daughter would want in an instant. I like the purple one. The purple one's nice. That's good. That's very good. Black one's pretty utilitarian as well. That'd be you'd get away with looking like it was a higher quality than it actually is. The F stands for fudge. Yes. The pink one. The wife, my little girl would love that. She wants a camera for Christmas. So everyone's getting into cameras at the moment. 16 megapixel camera, 2.7 inch front LCD. And a 3-inch rear LCD. It's got built-in Wi-Fi connectivity as well, which is pretty impressive. 5x optical zoom. It goes out to 25 mil, which is brilliant. Lowest setting on the f-stop is f2.5. It's got dual image stabilization, which I thought was a good feature. I don't get why it's only got 720p video. It must be something to do with the sensor that they've got. But that's all it does. And it only does 30 frames a second as well. Why you would make a camera at the moment that doesn't shoot 1080p, I've got no idea. 720 is utterly dead unless it's for higher frame rates. 3-inch rear LCD screen, wide range of special intelligent smart auto features, which can auto adjust the camera's settings. Yeah, and it's got a whole pile of crap filters as well, just like the Instagram crowd would go. How much is this then, chat room? Come on, give us the thing. It takes a memory card. It's a micro SD slot that fits in. Images are not brilliant, I have to say. They're pretty nasty generally. Including ISO 800 and onwards, I thought they were pretty much unusable. I would say the last usable setting you've got is ISO 400 in the camera. The camera sharpening seems pretty good. So if you do take an image and it comes out a bit soft, you know, it does do a bit of sharpening with it and doesn't do too bad a job. It's not too harsh. Macro's okay, but the one thing I will say is there's a lot of colour aberrations on the macro stuff that I looked at, and there's an awful lot of problems with it in distance as well, and aberrations. Flash seems to underexpose from what I've seen of the pictures as well, which isn't good, but actually I prefer an underexposing flash. I mean, I had a little Canon Ixus that I used to carry around just for parties and stuff like that, 7 megapixels, and I had scotch tape that I used to put layers of scotch tape and toilet paper over the top of the flash, and I had about 6 or 7 layers of scotch tape just to diffuse the flash and give it a little bit more of an ambient glow rather than, you know, your full-on tungsteny go. And it worked really, really well. Price, Windrider's got it right, it's £99. So it's kind of it's not disposable, obviously, at that kind of price, but it's something that you could throw at the kids and take away on holiday and that kind of thing. It's not too bad at all. £125, they're saying in the chat room. £100, okay. Micro SD, Forget it, says Adam. I guess there's a frame rate, there's a transfer rate issue there for data. Would I prefer to underexpose, sir? It suits you. Thank you, Bat Wench. I can't say anything serious on here. Would I buy it? I'd buy it for the kids. I wouldn't buy it for me. Be wary, though. The images were pretty crappy after ISO 400. Next thing up, then, is something that's a little bit more at the pro end, and that's a compact flash card from Delkin. This is the, what's it called? It's the CF1050X. It's got a fantastic read and write speed. I mean, your write speed is 120 megabits per second, so that's going to put a lot of 4K video onto this straight away. The data rate transfer that you need for a 4K is what kills most cameras. They need, if you look at the Blackmagic cameras, they take an SSD to get the write speed up so that they can shoot 2.5 and 4K. The read speed on it is equally good or better. It's 160 megabits per second. So what you're doing is taking a lot of that video then off onto your hard drive at a decent speed as well, providing your drive can deal with the write speed. There's different flavors of this right the way up, but the top one is the one that you're seeing here, which is 128 gigabytes. These are high-end compact flash cards. If you look at most of the pro range for cameras, only the very top end will take compact flash now. Most of them are SD limited. Price? Come on, chat room. Give me a price. How much do you think this is? £1,000, says Adam. Okay, it's not that bad. £700. It is built for 4K video, though. It is not built for the average shooter to go out and shoot on a 7-megapixel camera. But it's 700 quid, so it's a good old price there. But the read and write speeds are bloody impressive. Really, really good. Well done, Delkin. Next piece of equipment we got, I've had a play with. I've bought this. It's called InPaint 5.5, and it's a great piece of little software that you use to get rid of stuff. It's kind of a cloner, if you like. One of the things that you do in advertising a lot is you get images through and there'll be flaws on the image, and you spend a lot of time taking it out. You know, the ripples don't look right. There's a shaft of light that's coming off the water that you want to get rid of. And as you can see in this one, there's people in the picture that the girl doesn't want to be seen with. She wants to look like she's got the whole of the lagoon to herself. And this thing's supposed to be really quick and easy at removing them. So here we go. This is one that I did. And I did this really in about 3 seconds. It was dirt easy. I just got the tool and I painted a line down the rocket trail and the top of the rocket and across the bottom. And I also did the shadow at the bottom, if you notice the shadow that's crossed across the land from it. And in 3 seconds, it produced the image on the right. Now, you're going to say, well, that's pretty amazing. It is pretty amazing, but if you look very closely and if you blow that image up to 100% and look at it, you can see that the coastline has not been correctly reproduced. I don't know whether that was because I didn't really take that much care on the edge finding of the thing I wanted removed. And there's a lot of blurring up in the top of the where the shuttle was and the first part of the jet stream out of it. I think if you take a bit more care with it, you get a far better results. The thing that's really interesting about this for me is that it's only £20, and it's available as well. It's available for Windows and Mac OS, but it's also available in the Mac App Store, and it's ready for Maverick as well, so you're not going to get any problems with that if you go, and it gives 64-bit support as well. Version 5.5 of the software is out there and available now, and you can buy it now. And I have. And you also get it then, of course, if you've bought it in the Mac App Store across 5 year machines, which is brilliant. So well worth it. Now, you've got to be judicious. I've had a go at doing a picture from a rugby field, and it was actually quite a cluttered image. And it did a pretty bad job when I did a pretty bad job of the edge selection and the outfield find. But if you take your time and you do go just up to the edge and you get very accurate with it, the results improve rapidly. And the other thing that I found was if you did it sectionally, do a bit and then do another bit and then do another bit, it does pretty well. Is it a lot quicker than the extract tool on Photoshop? Hell yes. No question. Does a far, far better job than trying to do it with extract. But is it better than doing it yourself properly? It can be as good, but sometimes it doesn't do great results. But, I mean, you're talking about complicated images, really complicated images. If you look at the image that she's got there of the girl in the lagoon, that's the kind of stuff it's built for. How does it do with that? It does a brilliant job with that. And the more accurate you are with the edge find, the better it is. I would say, as a recommendation, That would be my recommendation of the week, no question. I'm going to pick it in the Mac show as being my software. Well worth it at 20 quid and really, really good. Next thing we've got. It's out there. Adobe couldn't go without releasing a new Elements. Adobe Photoshop Elements 11 is out there. Now, if you're an amateur photographer, the Elements range is really, really good. It's really powerful. There's a lot of stuff in there. You're getting the features kind of two stages back on Photoshop, but that's changing a little bit with some extra features that are coming in that you've not got yet. This is plain and simply... I'm going to completely steal here from Barry Collins' review on PC Pro, if you go and have a look. He says it's a limited selection of new features which adds little to a powerful market-leading package that really is stuck in the doldrums. And he's absolutely right. And it's not cheap. This is £115 if you want to buy it. Yeah, it's good and it's powerful software and it's great, don't get me wrong. But for the Elements package, that's quite pricey. I seem to recall it was under £90 when 11 was released. You can get 11 now, which is extremely powerful, in the Mac App Store, and you get five copies again there, and it's only £54. What's it got? Well, it's got a lot of content-aware features, which have been around since CS4, really. But one of the things that it's got is content-aware move. This is a picture of Barry's of Lou's ladies' football. And you can see what's happened here is he's shot very close to the edge, and what he wants to do is create a bit more of a cloned environment for the grass. Now, in advertising, that's an enormous feature where people have shot stuff, they've got too close up to the edge, and you just need to create something to the side to fill a space that's the right proportions. That's done an extremely good job, I think. I looked at the grass, and it looked a little bit wishy-washy, but the rest of it does too. I think that's excellent. It's got three replication marks. You can just see next to her arm there's three black dots on the pitch. Those have been repeated on the left-hand side and turned slightly. So that's the algorithm not noticing that those were blemishes. But that's not a bad job. Not a bad job at all. It's getting a tad pricey. More than a tad, unfortunately. More than a tad. And one of the other features it's got is it's got like a novelty mode. So you can get mugs and mats and all that kind of stuff. And you can make them yourself. There's jigsaw mode as well, where you can make something into a jigsaw, and if you can find someone that makes jigsaws, they'll make it out for you. And one of the WTF features that are in it is pet red eye. Yes, they've got their own feature for pet red eye. It gets rid of red eye in pets, which is great. But I mean, the old red eye for humans did, you just drew a bigger circle instead of using it on the tiny cornea. So there you go. There are some guided edits in there as well, which I think I feel the hand of Scott Kelby on those. So they'll take you through types of effect that you want to do, and they'll take you step by step by step by step through them, which is really pretty good. And also there is some one-click filters for the Instagram crowd, which, holy hell, we don't want that. And this one comes with the organizer. Be warned as well, though, if you buy the cheap version that's on Mac App Store of 11, then you will not get the organizer wizard. That does not come with the organizer. But I've got to say, I use Finder as an organizer, and Pathfinder, it doesn't do anymore. One of the things it does do, which is nice, is tablet and desktop syncing. So any changes that you make to your organizer on desktop, it'll make to the organizer on your tablet and vice versa as well. Barry described it as tired and bloated, which I think sounds fair. He went through an awful lot of the CPU load on it, and he was saying it's really CPU hungry. He was talking about 50% of the CPU was being used, and his RAM, it was using an entire gig of RAM just when it was sat with the organizer and editor opening. It wasn't processing in, they were just open, and just the organizer alone took 50% of CPU. So tired and bloated should be the tagline for Adobe. That's true, definitely. And it'll certainly be the title of the podcast, perhaps, I would suggest. Last bit of gear then that we've got is the new Nikon N1. Brilliant. This thing is 14.2 megapixels. Its ISO range is 160 to 6400. It shoots at 15 frames per second in burst mode with autofocus, and it actually achieves that according to the blurb and the review. But if you take the autofocus off, this thing will shoot 60 frames a second of stills at 14.2 megapixels. You haven't got to reduce the resolution. That's the thing. You know, yeah, that's great, but you've got to reduce the resolution for that. No, this is full resolution. It will shoot 60 frames per second of quality stills at full resolution if all you do is take the autofocus off. Fantastic. It comes with a GPS, and it's also got in it an altimeter, so that it's not just a case of working out where you were in the world, it can tell you exactly what height you were at as well. Digital compass is in there. It's got an electronic virtual level, which shows up in the eyepiece and on screen as well, so it tells you if you're level or not. Wouldn't you need the £700 compact flash card for it? No, you wouldn't, because it doesn't take a compact flash, unfortunately, mate, so you're stuffed. What it'll do as well is take the last 20 high-res images that you've shot, and it will recommend which one is the best of them all. So kind of just like the 925 did, the Nokia 925, you're shooting a burst mode off, and then it's going to say, right, little Johnny was making impact with the baseball at this point. This is the one that you want. Great idea. It's going on sale on the 10th of October, so only a week to wait, 10 days. £749 for the body and the 11 to 27mm lens. £949 if you want the 11 and the 10mm lens. And if you just want to buy the 10mm lens on its own afterwards, then it's going to cost you £300. So you're £100 better off by getting the bigger kit. I've got a friend who's got one of these, and he absolutely swears by it. He says it's a great little camera. He's got the original N1, not this one, and he says it's fantastic. It takes stunning pictures. One of the other things you've got this, which you didn't have the last N1, if you notice, the picture I showed you has got loads of water wrapped around it. This thing's fully waterproof. It is freeze-proof, dust-proof, waterproof, shock-proof, etc. And apparently on the demo video for this, the guy dunks it in a water tank and then drops it on the floor from waist height 10 times, then puts it back in the water tank and takes it out, and it still works perfectly. It's good. And an interchangeable lens camera that is waterproof by itself that doesn't need an extra case, I think's really, really impressive. It looks good. I like it. It takes decent pictures, I would think, and it just is great. Well done. Well done. And I think the price isn't bad. £1,000, that's a little bit more than people might want to pay, but you're getting a hell of a camera for that money, most definitely. There we go. That was the news. I was going to do a little kit as well from Visilux Studio. If you want to go and look for it, it's the Visilux Studio 180. It's three 180 flash heads and stands and with umbrellas and softboxes and stuff. And it's way pricey, £477 for it if you want it. So I would say don't buy it if you really want to. Next thing up then. The questions. Is that the sort of stuff that I need as I'm a clutterbox? Waterproofing without chunky controls, really good idea, says Windrider. It's incredible for an interchangeable camera to be waterproof. It's a killer camera if it was about £700. Notch proof from Carl Madden's head, though. Don't know what that means. Never mind. First question, Neil Cochran. Thank you very much, mate. I was a keen, very amateur photographer, but these days I only have an iPhone 5 to play with, as my Fuji S305 has finally died. I'm not in a position to replace it with a good compact or a DSLR or a bridge or something like that. Can you tell me everything I need to know about HDR? On the iPhone 5, I noticed that when I select HDR, I get two images in the photo album. I know I need specific apps on the iPhone or programs on my PC. No Macs here yet. To combine the images, what would you recommend I'd need, or something that's very cheap? What type of shots benefit from HDR and don't? And I assume that you've not covered this topic before, as I've only been watching for a few months. I assume you've not covered this topic before, because I've only been watching for a few months. Keep up the good work and all the other shows. Thank you, Neil. Right. What is HDR? High dynamic range is what it describes for. And what it's doing is it's telling you that it's giving you the pushed edge of the range of colour and tone that is in the image. So if you shoot something that's in front of you, which has got an illuminated background, you're going to get a silhouette. That's pretty obvious. What HDR does is it attempts to take three images that are bracketed, the normal calculated exposure, and then one above and one below. And the algorithm combines these to try and look for the dynamism that there is in the shadows and the dynamisms that there is in the highlights from the underexposed and overexposed image, respectively. And then it merges them with the correctly exposed image and tries to look for an even tone or spread. Now, if you go to Photoshop, that's got a slider on there, you can control the amount of high dynamic range that you get. If you've got picture information on the sensor, then it will do anything you like with it. And you get some of the high dynamic range stuff that comes back. Looks really, really unnatural, and that's not good. If you've got just a really bright sky and things in the foreground have suffered a little bit, then an HDR image can be fantastic just to pop those up, just to make them look good. news outlets now, if they publish photos, are saying this was adjusted in Photoshop, and all they've done is alter the dynamic range so you can see what's going on in the image. I don't get the point of that. I think that's perfectly fine. I wouldn't worry too much. But HDR is high dynamic range, and it does work in on bracketing images with an algorithm that knits them together afterwards. And so it gives you as many of the lows as possible and as many of the highs as possible that are evenly exposed. It looks great. The iPhone can do a good job with HDR, but I've got to say, more often than not, when I've looked at the HDR images it's done, they've kind of been, okay, it's a little bit better, but it's not a lot better. I'd have done better myself if I'd have just taken in three images from it. But you can't bracket your images or anything like that. It's good for point and shoot. Look for it when you've got difficult light conditions, so there's lights behind your subject and that kind of stuff. Dynamic range will help you a bit with that. Or if it's a bit of a dim day, put in high dynamic range, and it'll favour then the overexposed image, so it'll drag more of the low exposed stuff up. Plain and simple. Next question is from Andrew. Hi, you and hope all's well. With the upcoming iPhone release, which is now gone, there's no doubt there'll be a lot of talk about megapixels in the world of mobile science stuff. However, I've heard that megapixels aren't as important as the sensor size and shouldn't really be used as a way of measuring how good a camera is. I can understand why a sensor size would be important, but could you explain why megapixels aren't as important as the phone manufacturers would have us believe? Well, simply, your pixel on your sensor is a method of gathering light, and the bigger it is, the more effectively it can gather ranges of light as opposed to just single points. And if you look at the iPhone release that came out when they did the keynote, they were talking about the size of the sensor pixels being bigger relative to everything else. So the sensor wasn't that much bigger, but the pixels were bigger individually within the sensor. That's the key part. The size of the sensor is basically just saying, right, if I've got 6 megapixels and I spread it across this size of sensor, and then I've got 12 megapixels, 12 points of light, and I spread it across the same size, they are twice as densely packed. And if they're more densely packed, you're more likely to get the crosstalk issue that Samsung was talking about earlier on with the ISO cell, or what you're actually going to end up doing is having something that's actually fairly low quality. So to try and boost the numbers of pixels and keep quality up has always been the nightmare. Pretty much now as well, what you're talking about is algorithms that will sit and look at the light that's gathered by the pixels and start analysing the light and coming out with better solutions for it. A lot of cameras do a lot of post-processing and post-thinking now. A lot of them have got quad-core processors in them, so certainly cameras right up to quad-core processors. And your cell phones are taking immensely powerful processors, and also now you've got the co-processor in the iPhone, which is going to do separate functions while the main processor deals with the hard crunching. It's not about the sensors, it's not about the pixels that are in the camera, it's about how big the sensor is. But that said, I would have said that was ultra important 4 years ago, 5 years ago when we started the photo show. It's not as important now. What's more important is that it starts with a good set of lights. It starts with a good size of sensor would be fantastic, but it's how the algorithm deals with them that's the key part. That's where your real benefit and blowout comes from it. So don't worry about pixels as much anymore. More pixels doesn't mean a better image, you're absolutely right, but if you've got more pixels and the algorithms are doing more work and it's saying, you know, we've got an algorithm that's different that does the following, like the Nikon 1020 cell phone, then yeah, that makes a big difference. Have a look at that. If you've got a question, send it to us, send it to me, britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and I'll put it in the show. I'll answer it. All the questions we're at are genuine questioners from listeners just like you. So send them in and I'll do whatever I can. If I know the answer, I'll tell you. If I don't, I'll try and point you where you can get it. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. They are absolutely stunning. I went to their data center and shot a video for them, and their data center's fantastic. These guys really care about your data. There's no question of that. They showed me the aircon units that they've got. These things are phenomenally expensive and they're brilliant at what they do. They're really, really careful about how they store stuff. I actually saw the BTN server. I physically saw it, and it was great. My little home was sat there purring away. They've got an awful lot of good features. They've also got data here in this country. So if you buy something from UK2, you could be hosting in the London data center, more than likely. It's not like they farm it out somewhere else and there's a warehouse in Guatemala that's dealing with your precious data. UK2 are based in the UK. They have your data and it's in their London data center. So, and they put a lot of time and effort into looking after it. So if you can, please support UK2 because they're great as a company. And also please support them because they support us. They pick up all our bandwidth charges and all that kind of stuff. And they maintain our website for us and help us out with that too, and the server for it rather. So please look after them. They're brilliant. UK2.net. Couldn't do the show without them. Right, my pick of the week then has got to be Imprint 5.5. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Great for the money. Well worth buying. Get yourself out there to the Mac App Store and get it. I'm going to be back again, I hope, next week, but I've got a big project going on, which is due on Saturday, so I'll see how I go, but I might not be making it. Either way, we'll be back soon with the first show. I'll try and do it at the weekend or something. Keep listening. I do apologise for the fact that we crapped out and disappeared for a while, but we're back now. Stick with us. Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.